Ron Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Polls are closed in Ohio, where residents have voted on whether to enshrine abortion rights in the state's constitution. CBS News estimates that Ohio issue one is leaning yes. In Kentucky, CBS News estimates the race for governor is a toss-up between incumbent governor Andy Beshear, a Democrat, and Republican Attorney General Daniel Cameron. CBS's Torian Small in Louisville.
I talked to Daniel Cameron's campaign, and they said that they are very optimistic. They said voter registration numbers are looking up in Republicans' favors, and we've seen Cameron go on the trail and go after Andy Beshear's record, but really pushing him further to the left.
Virginia voters are choosing who controls the state legislature. The launching of attacks by Hamas reaches 30 days. CBS's Charlie Daggett was embedded with the Israeli army in northern Gaza.
The city, 60,000 people, and nothing really was left standing. We're talking about a pretty populated area. And when I spoke to the commander, I said, why was it necessary to go so big? He said, well, you know, it is a tactic, and we've seen it ourselves in places like Fallujah and Mosul. They're trying to level the playing field to take away from militants any kind of ambush opportunities. Most importantly, to take away the IEDs, you know, those homemade bombs, which were everywhere.
Outside of the U.S. Supreme Court today, advocates on both sides rallied as justices heard arguments in a case that pits gun rights against a federal law that seeks to protect victims of domestic violence. In Washington, D.C., police arrest 21-year-old Amir Lavon Merrill, who they say had a rifle at a park near the Capitol. CBS's Nicole Killian.
Authorities say there was no threat to the congressional community, but the incident follows another one this week where U.S. Capitol Police confiscated a pair of Glock handguns after two suspects crashed a stolen vehicle into a barricade.
I'm very concerned about the heightened threats against members.
The investigation is still ongoing. Police are trying to figure out how Morrell may have gotten the gun. He faces a warrant and several charges, including having an unregistered firearm.
A lot of people are still waiting for their direct deposits to go through after a glitch in the system last week. CBS's Matt Piper reports.
Up to 900,000 Americans have had issues with their direct deposits since payday last Friday. It's an issue with the payments company, The Clearinghouse, and some of its customers at Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Chase have not seen their money still.
They still are, you know, among the largest banks in the country and have millions of customers.
Banking consultant Bert Ely.
How did this problem erupt in the first place? Was there in fact some kind of hack that created it?
The Clearinghouse calls the mess a processing error. This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Craigscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Milwaukee Brewers are being asked to chip in more to maintain American Family Field for the next 27 years. WisPolitics reports an amendment to the ballpark bill would increase the Brewers' contribution by $10 million. The ask from taxpayers would go down by $36 million. Senators are adjusting the bill that passed the Assembly to address the concerns of enough lawmakers to get the 17 votes necessary to pass. Plans for the National Football League draft in Green Bay are coming together. The league says it will happen on April 24th through the 26th in 2025. Fox Valley leaders are counting on as many as 250,000 football fans to come to Northeast Wisconsin for the draft. Organizers are still working on the details, but most of the events will happen in and around Lambeau Field. Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
Badgers begin the season with a win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Badger men's basketball team got things going the right way with a 105-76 win over Arkansas State. Things get a little more interesting when they host the number 9th ranked team in the nation, Tennessee, Friday night inside the Kohl Center. NFL, the Rams couldn't do much with quarterback Brett Rippon against the Packers defense Sunday. Green Bay went on to win 20-3. Today, the Rams waive Rippon and signed Carson Wentz. Baseball, Craig Counsell says one of the reasons he decided to take the Cubs job is because Chicago is only 90 miles away from Milwaukee. Owner Mark Antanasio on where the Brewers go from here.
We have a commitment to players in our organization, and we have a commitment to winning. We lost Craig, but I've reflected on this. You know, Craig has lost us, and he's lost our community also. It's really a special place.
That's Brewers owner Mark Antanasio with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy skies tonight with scattered rain showers likely. Lows level off around 39. Easterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy tomorrow. Scattered thunderstorms likely 50. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK.
Do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to pay attention to. It is the day where democracy rules. People go to the polls, cast their vote. I did my share. I got out and voted today. Hopefully my local school board won't go nuts. Hopefully the insaniacs the Moms for Liberty are in my neighborhood too. So hopefully they will not take over the local public schools and, well, do the kind of destruction that, well, that only they can do. But look, you know, lots of things to watch. Lots going on. Ohio front and center with the abortion issue and issue one. And legal pot. Interesting to see how that will go. Early numbers in, kind of where we were expecting. The abortion issue, issue one, about 60-40 with early returns. And the pot issue, running a little bit behind that. Virginia also going to be a place because abortion is kind of front and center this election cycle. Going to be interesting to see how the legislature swings in Virginia. And if Virginia is okay, you know, with a 15-week abortion ban. This is kind of the litmus test of what the legislature, if it's a Republican legislature, that's what you're getting. And it also could mean that Glenn Youngkin could be the late entrant into the Republican presidential primary, because now he's going to have a mandate at home and a way forward to try and quell some of the anti-abortion stuff, because they got to figure out a way to uncatch the car, to where the dog uncatches the car, and they solve this issue. And then, of course, you know, to use it again in the future for fundraising. And then, look, you know, there's Mississippi, the governor's race down there. I'm not hopeful, but, you know, maybe we'll see. But the big one already, Kentucky. I was expecting a late night in Kentucky. It's already been called that incumbent governor Andy Beshear will be reelected. Now, just yesterday, the polling all said dead heat, 47-47. Neck and neck. And that's not what it's turned out to be. In fact, 30 minutes after the polls closed, they called. You had people calling the election because it's, you know, the numbers are, I think it's like 56. Beshear's got like 56% at this point. Not the 47 we were expecting. And what got me today, and this is one of these moments where you go, when do we stop paying attention to these polls? I mean, everyone's got a poll now. Every college has got a poll. There's online polls. There's this poll. There's that poll. You know, Joe's got a poll. Mary's got a poll. They all got polls. And, you know, most of them are garbage. Most of them just play into this frame of the horse race. And look, we talked about a poll yesterday. The Siena College poll said Biden's losing in 5 of the 6 battleground states. And I said, look, you know, the reason that I brought it up is I hope Democrats pay attention to that. I hope they go, oh my gosh, we're losing in battleground states. We should do better. Not to throw up our hands and go, well, you know, it looks like it's over. No, do better. Maybe don't do what Hillary Clinton didn't do and maybe go to places. Maybe get out there and knock on doors and kiss babies and press the flesh and do the hard work of campaigning. Maybe that's what we need to do, because here's the weird thing. And I come back to, we're going to talk about this, you know, quite frequently in the coming days, weeks, and months. The fact of the matter is, and this is what's being sold to us. In fact, a new poll. It's a blueprint YouGov poll. I don't even know who the hell Blueprint is, but they've got a poll. And what they are saying is that, you know, President Biden attempting, you know, to use the job numbers as his selling point. No, it's not helping. You know, it's not helping because, you know, people have all these jobs. They're concerned about inflation. That's the real thing. And that's the narrative that we're being sold, isn't it? That all these voters are angry and disgruntled and look, we aren't even in the presidential campaign season yet. We're not. The Biden camp hasn't really made their argument. Not even opening statements yet. So it's easy to have what we see in front of us. All of these polls and all of this anger and all of this angst. Because you have a right-wing media in this country that wakes up every morning, bright and early. Give them credit. And they stay up late at night. And their only purpose is to sow seeds of dissent, is to make people angry at every turn, is to pit people against each other. And of course, you know, outrage merchants, you know, it sells. Anger sells, fear sells, outrage sells. It does. Because, you know, we don't want to hear happy stories. We don't want to hear people doing well. No, we want misery. We want other people to be miserable. At least that's what it seems. Because if you listen to the right-wing outrage merchants and the stories that they tell, it's all, you're getting screwed. They're taking your tax dollars and you're getting nothing for it. They're just giving it to those people over there. And look, social media is full of this stuff. And again, it's what people are throwing out there. No, look, the job numbers are good. We've got really low unemployment. It's true. If we had a stronger labor movement, if we had more people, a higher union density, if we had labor laws that encourage people to join and form unions, I would argue the wages would be higher faster. And corporate America would be maybe held in check a little bit, and this inflation wouldn't be running as rampant. But this is where we are. We're in a moment where we're being sold by all of this special interest, all of these people who their lives and their careers and their attention is based on, you know, whatever polling that they can dream up. And you know, the more you read through this stuff, the more you realize that, you know, most of it's garbage. And I use them to go, hey, look, this is what's being said. Here's why they're generally wrong. And like yesterday, I brought up the Siena College poll. Yeah, they're losing all these battle states. And I used it as the example of get out there and do some work, get out there and hustle more, tell your story, and to point out the fact that the right wing controls and the moneyed interests control the vast majority of everything we see, hear, and read. So am I surprised that some of these snap polls online, some of these, you know, online surveys are angry people? No, because those are the people who are online. The people who are out there living their lives, they seem to be doing okay. And maybe we should spend more time thinking about them and less time thinking about the blueprint poll, which I've never heard of blueprint. I hope somebody will update me on who the blueprint people are. But, you know, like the Bashir thing, it was a dead heat, and it was over within a half an hour. And that's a good thing. Today could be a good sign and make all of those polls irrelevant. Because if the Democrats sweep in on the issues that look, are important, maybe this is the sign for 2024, which is why you're seeing Republicans who are, you know, looking for somewhere out. Now, today, the good news out of the Biden folks, 150th judge was confirmed. That's a pretty good bit of work. And as I say about Biden, the guy shows up, does his job. And that's what I like about him, just out there doing the job. Here's my problem. We have a Republican legislature. We have a Republican Congress who they're not doing their thing. And what that means is in, what is it, 10 days now? Are we, was it 10 days? 10 days, we're looking at a potential government shutdown. We're looking at, well, chaos. The people in the House who don't seem to understand what it means to govern are driving the car right into the ditch. And they want to stand for election and say, hey, vote for us. You know, November 17th is coming very quickly. And, you know, 45 days, you know, 35 days ago, it seemed like a long time. We got plenty of time. You know, the adults in the room are going to solve this. You know, we're not going to have to worry before Thanksgiving that, you know, all. But now they're talking about, no, we're going to try something different. We're going to have a staggered shutdown. What they call it, a laddered continuing resolution, where they're going to shut down certain parts of the government. You know, the parts that they really don't like, you know, like the ones that feed children and feed the homeless and help seniors. Yeah, I'm going to get those first. How do we get so crazy? I mean, how do we get to this place? I know it comes back to voting, and it comes back to who we put into the halls of power, who we elect as our leaders. We got to do better. And this is why, you know, this next year is going to be very important. Because I fear Republicans have been doing their foolhardy best to cause a recession. The only way they have a chance next November is if there's major economic chaos, or if they can convince enough people that their lives are horrible. If they can convince enough people that, you know, Joe Biden caused all this inflation. And inflation has been coming down, and it's come down off of the high, which was predictable. You know, you can't shut down an economy and then just flip the switch and it all go back to the way it was. You can't have a major crisis like a pandemic and expect things to go right back the way they were. But we're Americans, and we expect things to be, well, neat and quick and in a nice little bag and handed out a window. So it makes me wonder what the rest of the day's numbers are going to be. But I want to hear your thoughts. Did you get out and vote today? Did you have an opportunity to exercise that little bit of power that each citizen has to engage in this wonderful experiment of self-governance? And what kind of experiment and what kind of experience was it? Or did you get harassed and harangued and got an ID or is this you or any of that? I want to hear it. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I'll take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Gotta tell you, I love election. I love election time. I love the idea that as a country, we come together and we say, you know what, we're gonna choose our people, and we're gonna get our ideas and our thoughts and our hopes and our dreams and our wants. This is how we are going to address them. Now, look, for too long we've been voting for some of the wrong folks, but I still have hope. And every election day, I think that, you know, this could be the moment when American working people wake up and go, you know what, we're going to change things, we're going to make things better, we're going to use our power of the vote to change our little piece of the world and ultimately change the world. Let's go to the phones. We got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you today?
I am tired. I have been busy today.
Did you get out and vote?
That's a silly question. Of course I did. But and? What I wanted to say was, I noticed a difference in the atmosphere in my little hamlet today. There, we weren't quite as crazy as we have been in the previous one.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, and I actually had a wonderful conversation with two Republicans. And one of them actually agreed with me, because I don't even know how we get on the subject now, you know. But I brought up about, you know, I said, religion has no place in government or politics or schools. The only place it has a place at is church and in your personal life.
Yep.
And they were like, absolutely. What if you're a Methodist and they're saying, well, only Lutherans? And I said, absolutely. So I thought, well, hey, maybe a couple of people have sobered up from the Trump drunk. I don't know.
No, and this is where having these conversations are very important, Alice. And I always give you credit for being willing to engage in the verbal jousting that sometimes happens with folks of the other hat color. And I think that's a good thing. I think we need to be doing more of that.
Well, we do. And then they were like, you need to run for council. And I said, trust me, nobody would be happy with me on council.
Well, I'll tell you this. If you run for council, I'll write you the first donation to help get you started.
Well, I'll let you know. How's that, then?
There you go. Good for you,
Alice.
All right,
have a good evening.
We need people who are going to run for public office, not just people who can raise money. I mean, this has been my problem with elections for a very long time. Because, you know, for a while here, I've had people bugging me going, you should run for Congress, you should run for House, you should run for all this stuff. And I'm going, no, I shouldn't, because I'm not going to be able to raise the kind of money that you need to compete. Now, if you had publicly funded elections where money wasn't the issue, issues being the issue, then yeah, that's a game I'm willing to jump in the middle of. That's something I'm willing to throw my hat in the ring in and maybe take a beating over. But ideas should matter more than your ability to raise money. And, you know, these elections, they are really freaking crazily expensive. And too much so. This is why I've always thought that, you know, we should have, on the airwaves, an amount of time that goes to each candidate that gives them the ability to get their message out, that funding should be coming from the tax base to say, hey, let's see who runs the best campaign with this kind of funding. Not who can go and get into a billionaire's pocket or into a, you know, some dark money group's pocket and fund, you know, huge campaigns, but who builds the best mousetrap? Who's got the best idea? Who's got the best policies? Who actually wants to govern? I mean, this is the other part of this. And I think what we've seen over the last several months is we have a Republican Party right now. You look at the House that does not know how to govern because they've told themselves for so long that government is the problem and then should do nothing that they don't know what to do when they are in charge. And it's turned into, you know, just building their little stardom. You know, we want attention. And, you know, I had someone email me a story today that made me chuckle because I hadn't really thought about it until this person emailed me and said, hey, have you heard from Marjorie Three Names lately? Have you heard from, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene? And I'm going, you know, come to think about it, not really. You know, or Gun Fetish Barbie. Haven't heard from either one of them. They've been kind of a little toned down, in, at least in the worlds that I'm looking. And it's like, yeah, you know why? Well, she tied her horse to the wrong wagon. You know, Kevin McCarthy was her guy. She was all in. And now you've got, he's out of power. The Freedom Caucus is, you know, has lost their minds. And here she is with basically no home and having been, you know, for the most part, ostracized from her former group of crazy people in the House Freedom Caucus. And the rank and file Republicans already hated her. So there isn't much of a home for her left. And you know, it will be interesting to see if she's able to, you know, to rebuild herself because, you know, she's one of those people who always figures out how to get attention. But no, I haven't been seeing much of her lately. And that's a good thing. And you know, because Alice just sparked something there. And, you know, it could we be in a turning point moment? Because come to think about it, you know, I went to my polling place today and it wasn't lunacy. Granted, it wasn't crowded. I walked right in. There were plenty of machines. I waited for all of 7 seconds. And got to cast my vote and go get my sticker. In fact, not only did they give me a sticker, they gave me two. I get one now and I have one for later. And look, you know, my wife and I have always taken our children to vote. She got up bright and early, you know, right at the crack of, you know, oh my God, it's early, and took the kids over before school. And it's my day off. I got in a little bit later than normal, but still got in. It's one of those things. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Steve on line one. Steve, how are you?
Fine, thank you. And hopefully I'm not repeating anything you've already said. I'm just jumping in the car here. But, I mean, there are a number of races that are a sort of, I think, a precursor to where the country is that are going on today. And hopefully we'll get some good results. As I understand, the Democrat has been reelected in Kentucky as governor. So, I mean, I do think that we are perhaps, you know, we have crossed the Rubicon, as it is, in terms of Trumpism. I'm not arguing that MAGA is dead, but I will say that I think that it has crested in terms of its power block, and I think that they can't go anywhere but down. And as we've discussed before, I mean, people aren't terribly enamored with Joe Biden. You know, I mean, none of us who voted for him were. I think in 2020, he was the safe candidate. You needed, let's face it, you needed a middle-of-the-road white male to run against Donald Trump and that, in order to safely remove that cancer from the body politic that was America. Now, he wasn't anybody's idea of the greatest candidate, but he surprised a lot of us. You know, we've seen a lot of progressive policies come out of the Biden administration, in spite of the fact that he didn't have the most loyal of backing in the Senate, and the fact that he's lost now the House in terms of the last 2 years. So, yeah, I do think that, you know, we are looking at MAGA as sort of in the rearview mirror. Again, it's not dead, and I could be wrong with regard to where things go, because a year from now, when we're going to the polls, things could look entirely different, because there's that X factor. Is there a war in the Middle East that comes out of this Israeli-Palestinian conflict? Do we descend into that recession that we've been promised for so long? Do we get unemployment rates that are in the fours and fives and going up? Because, you know, I mean, that's inevitably what happens when you raise it.
The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. On this election day, CBS News estimates Ohio voters lean yes on issue one on enshrining abortion rights in the state constitution and issue two on legalizing adult marijuana use. CBS News Director of Elections and Surveys Anthony Salvanto.
We expect turnout to be about 3.9 million. So this is just getting started. In fact, that's going to be pretty high. It's going to approach the midterm level in the Senate. That's probably initially going to look like good news, probably for the Democrats, probably for the yes side.
CBS News estimates the race for Kentucky governor leans in favor of Democrat incumbent Andy Beshear. Israel's prime minister suggests he might be open to a pause in fighting to get more hostages released. Military consultant Jeff McCausland.
Cessation of aerial bombardment. You'd have a cessation of artillery fire, mortar fire on both sides, and both sides have got to respect that. And firing on either side would be classified as a violation of the pause or ceasefire and bring it to a close.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehoe. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Elections Commission is countering false claims made in the Wisconsin Assembly's impeachment articles against Administrator Megan Wolf. The articles list several grievances, including assertions that Wolf mismanaged Wisconsin's 2020 ballot count and that she enabled illegal absentee voting in long-term care facilities. The WEC counters that all decisions are made by its six bipartisan commissioners and not Wolf. Postal workers in Milwaukee are demanding safer working conditions. The National Association of Letter Carriers rallied at Milwaukee's downtown post office Sunday. Eight people were arrested not long ago in a mail carrier robbery ring in the city. Another letter carrier was murdered on his route. Postal workers at the rally say they want the post office to work with the union to find solutions. Nate Wiggehoe, Civic Media News.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Are you asking the court to do something that spells out a school funding formula?
This is not about the school finance formula itself. It's about the voucher programs. It says to create a system of public schools. It doesn't say anything about creating two parallel systems and sucking the money out of the public school system and providing it to the private school system, which is what is happening.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is Civic Media. This is Civic Media.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy skies tonight with scattered rain showers likely. Lows level off around 39. Easterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy tomorrow. Scattered thunderstorms likely 50. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 39 degrees.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
If they vote not to confirm you, that means essentially you're fired. And they just did it yesterday to 8 Evers appointees. And one of the people that was fired yesterday was Melissa Baldoff.
There's just really not a bottom for them yet. Years ago, I thought, well, it couldn't get worse than this. They found a way to let the bar sink a little bit lower.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
On The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
And peacemaking from this hardcore laissez-faire ideologue. For example, guess who he's chosen to be his director of policy? Big Pharma's top Washington lobbyist. Dan Ziegler has been the chief influence peddler for a dozen multi-billion dollar drug giants, including Eli Lilly, Merck, and Pfizer. Ziegler has furiously opposed every legislative effort to stop the rampant price gouging, even though 90% of Americans are clamoring for Congress to clamp down on pharmaceutical ripoffs. But we 90%ers don't control the revolving door. Mike does. Johnson piously cloaks himself in both the Christian gospel and libertarian myth of free markets, yet he has consistently pushed government action to restrict competition and protect drug monopolies. Now, in his first substantive action as Speaker, he is literally bringing Big Pharma inside to sit with him in the seat of legislative power. This is Jim Hightower saying drug pricing reform will soon come up for a vote in Congress. Before Mike's lobbyist buddy tells him what to do, let's demand that he reread the Sermon on the Mount.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Looking at the early win in Kentucky. And look, Andy Beshear ran on infrastructure. Ran on making lives better. And, you know, the debate clips that I saw really took his opponent to school. Really made him look bad. You need a governor who's going to make lives better. And for me, that's what politics is about. That's what moving, getting people into these positions who believe in governing, who want to govern, who believe that they can make lives better and actually have policies. For instance, we got a president who, first time probably in my lifetime, an industrial policy. You know, and oddly enough, kind of works. Some folks in Ohio, very happy jobs are coming to the town. Here to share some thoughts on the industrial policy and what kind of working it is doing. I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, great to be with you.
So let's start with Kentucky. I mean, you got the governor race that, just yesterday, the polling said dead heat, dead even. We're going to be up till late, to the wee hours, figuring out who wins this one. And, well, it was over within a half an hour. Yeah. But Beshear ran on infrastructure, didn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, there'll obviously be a lot to unpack, and there'll be all sorts of exit polls and hot takes and what have you. But when you look at fundamentally some of the economic policy, he proposed, I think, the largest new investment in Kentucky's history in infrastructure, was a willing participant with all of the federal funds coming in and expanding broadband. And so if you can deliver the goods for people, that's a check mark. So, and it's interesting, just goes to show you when you strip away all of the personalities or the figures that get wrapped up into this, the policies that a lot of Democrats have to run on are super, super popular. There's a long way between now and next November, obviously, and a lot of other factors that will be in play too, Rick. But there's an awful, you want to be operating from a position of strength as a country, as a political party, as a state, as a community. And right now, by and large, things are good from a macroeconomic perspective. Interest rates are high. Yes, that is true. Even with all of that, there is a massive amount of investment and building for the future that's going to make us more prosperous, that's happening in Kentucky, and in other states around the country as well.
I mean, I look at Ohio. I mean, Ohio is going to be like the chip capital of the world once they're done. Because there's a, my producer lives in Columbus, and he's like, look, you know, there's tons of investment going on here. There's tons of money being spent right now to bring these jobs and this industry to this state.
Yeah. Yeah, if you think about it, I mean, Intel alone, that investment's going to be $20 billion, okay? The scale of that in Central Ohio is almost unthinkable, kind of the kind of impact that will have. And, and this is the type of investment that means you're building something, there's going to be skilled workers who are there, thousands of skilled workers, and that's going to create the need essentially for a community college, like an entire community college, basically, for providing those skills. And then you'll have the upstream and the downstream suppliers, and you'll have all of the indirect, benefits of that. And the scale of this is also this is going to be put into place, you know, over the next 5, 10, 15 years. And so this is going to be durable. This isn't just like, you know, a booster shot and then it's done, right? I mean, this is something that's going to be there for generations and is going to make a big difference. And that Intel example, in the suburbs of Columbus is just one for semiconductors, where you're going to see upstate New York that's going to be transformed and other areas of the country as well. And these are areas of the country that have, you know, seen not a lot of investment, Rick, over the last couple of years. In fact, they've seen a lot of deindustrialization. And so this kind of flips the script, and it's going to be interesting to see how folks respond to this, I guess, both politically. But we know just from our own polling and from what we've seen is that if you strip names off of things like Biden, Trump, whatever, I mean, these investments are enormously popular, wildly popular.
I was going to ask you about that, because then you look at this stuff that's happening. And as I said at the beginning, the first time in my lifetime that we've had an industrial policy based on ensuring that we start bringing jobs home and investing in a future of manufacturing here at home. How come Biden hasn't gotten any credit for this? When you look at the polling, and like I just got done talking that most of the polling is garbage, but when you look at the polling out there, he's not getting credit for the unemployment rate being what it is, not getting credit for the investments that are being made. And in fact, a lot of times, people are saying that the investment was already done before him, and he gets none of that credit. I mean, it's a bizarre world we live in.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. All it seems like all the good news gets squeezed out of the cloth, right? I mean, it's just and all you get is the crisis or the making political hay out of issues, or the Trump saga just dominating a lot of the conversation as well. And I mean, I know from the polls that we've done, and it is surprising that, there's a huge chunk of people who don't even know there was an infrastructure investment that was passed that was transformational, $1.2 trillion. And when you ask them, even though the scale of construction of new factories is the largest ever measured, and we've been measuring it since 1964. So you think about that, that's over the last 50, almost 60 years, basically, the largest ever, within the last year. Most people say they haven't heard any news about factories coming to their area or even to the country, even though we know there are not only dozens of them, there are many, many hundreds of them that are going into place all over the country. And so it does. I mean, I almost feel like, I wish we had tens of millions of dollars, not to act as a PR agent on behalf of any political candidate, but just to say these policies are working, in your own community.
Yep.
And if you're looking for a manufacturing job, there's never been a better time. And you're negotiating from a position of strength. And these are great jobs, and they're going to be transformative to every community that they're in, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I had a caller, you know, point out that, you know, one of the things Obama didn't one of the pieces of advice Biden gave Obama was to not hurry up to the next thing, but to sell the accomplishments that they had done. And he said, you know, look, you know, Biden's got to take his own advice and not keep moving on to all of the stuff, because it's a lot of stuff he's done. But maybe go back and start selling some of this stuff. Like I said yesterday, there was a, you know, $16 billion investment in Amtrak, which got, you know, just a press release. You know, why aren't there events? Why aren't there, you know, big giant signs? You know, Biden did this. You know, why are we seeing that?
Yeah. It's a, well, look, I'm not doing the White House's strategy. I'm not in charge of what TV stations are covering or anything like this, but it is curious because, and this is my hunch, all right? This is my hunch, this is my intuition, is that, you know, this is so non-controversial that it just makes it uninteresting in the time of quick hits on social media or in the news, right? I mean, it's like you want a villain, you want a he said, she said, scenario or something like that. And this is just, you know, unmitigated good news that's happening. And I don't know that that sells, you know, anymore. And it's a damn shame that it really doesn't, because it is just, it is truly remarkable. But I think what Andy Beshear showed, and again, there's a lot of other stuff there, but that at the local level, you can make this work. You can definitely make this work if you lean into it. And you make it your own issue. And so there still is that possibility, but because the policy is done, translating that into awareness and making that also part of like a value system, I think is important, because, you know, we're building for the future. Sounds a lot better than like the bipartisan infrastructure law or something like that.
No, you got that right. You listen to the Rick Smith Show, or with Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Make sure you check out their work. You brought up Beshear and you know, the kind of good things. Immediately, I'm waiting to find out, you know, he's now being pushed to run for president. He won one election, another election in Kentucky, and now we're going to put him to the front of the – let's get him to replace Biden.
I don't even know what to say. Yeah, it's you know, the hot takes kind of run wild on election night, don't they? And if you pile them up, and if you look at all the ones that were made in the past, you know, there may be one that turns out to be good.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of hours to fill on cable news. it just is what it is. But here's the thing, and again, I go back to the fact that Biden and. And I said this earlier that, you know, the reality is he wasn't my first choice, but he's shown up and he's done the job. And we're seeing these kind of investments because of the infrastructure bill, because of the investments. And, you know, solar being a big part of this. And then you sent me a story earlier that said, look, you've got these firms coming in into the U.S. building these huge solar farms, you know, maybe going to help us with our climate issues, maybe going to help us get, you know, cheaper energy, maybe help.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a great story here, because 10 years ago, solar companies were going bankrupt in this country because they didn't have the policy support, and they were getting swamped by imports. Okay. And so they were just going bankrupt and they were leaving this country. And it just, the policy did not work that the Rescue Act in 2009 tried to put in place. Just didn't work. Okay. And so this is completely flipped now, and there's tariffs on these Chinese imports, and there will be tariffs on some other imports as well. And there's this massive investment that's been made, and unsurprisingly, companies are coming back and they're locating production here. Because, you know, we're an enormous energy consumer and there's a great market right here in the United States. And so you've seen dozens of factories announce they're going to, you know, open up all over America, in Ohio, you know, but also, you know, in the South, in the West, all over the place. And, you know, $8 billion in private investment and more to come. And it's one of those things, again, that is the, you know, because, you know, it was a controversial political issue, people focus on that rather than what the results are, which are, you know, great across the board for the United States. And so it is a, you know, the wrong thing to do, I think, would be to listen to folks who want to get rid of all of these policies just because they had Biden's name on it. And I think that there is a real danger that that could happen if Mike Johnson and some of these guys get their way. Can't let that happen.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, as you were talking about, you know, 2009 and the solar that, you know, we were trying to, Solyndra popped into my head.
Yeah,
it's, for years, it's all I've heard. You know, Solyndra, Solyndra. And I'm going, you know, this is what you need. You need sound government policy and you need strong, smart investment. And you need a plan to bring that. You just can't go, hey, we'd like to have it. And it appears you actually have to have a way forward. You have to have a plan for it and a way for it to actually work. And 100%. We've finally done that.
That's right.
Decades late, I would argue, but we're finally moving.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And by the way, Solyndra might have been a failure, but there were so many successes out of that that didn't get reported. One of them, Tesla. Tesla was nothing before the government investment that was made in the Recovery Act. And you can hate or love Elon Musk or whatever, but there is no disputing that Tesla was able to scale and is a very successful EV company in the United States now. And I have all sorts of disagreements with them, and I know you do too, but that was a massive success story out of that investment. And we're gonna see many, many, many more like that down the road.
Yeah, now I want to focus on that since you brought it up, because I have friends who believe that Elon Musk willed that out of sheer intestinal fortitude and determination, that he alone, Scott, was the birther of Tesla.
Look, no doubt the dude is smart, all right? But he is not an automaker, okay? He is not an automaker. I mean, he came out of PayPal, you know, which is a payment app. He does not know how to manufacturing an automobile. He was good at assembling a team, and they benefited from a, you know, massive capital infusion from the federal government and loan guarantees. And they were able to scale. And, you know, you look at them now, right? I'm sure that, you know, I see them all over the place. You probably see them too. And they're like ubiquitous. And again, I wish they were organized. I wish they had some better practices. But they put EV manufacturing on the map and people are trying to catch up. And I think that's a good thing to create that competition.
No, I'm right there with you. But this narrative that gets spun quite often, that you've got this this gazillionaire who pulled himself up by his bootstraps from the depths of poverty, and because he's just so much smarter than everybody else and works so much harder, that is not the Musk story. Lots of government investment, lots of other people and their work that he took advantage of. There's a lot to this story other than he's Horatio Alger pulling himself up by his bootstraps.
Yeah, they like you to believe all of that. And believe me, I hope all of these companies are very successful that are spun up as a result of this investment. I also hope, and in fact, I know because of some of the policy writers that were attached to this, that there's a better chance the workers will be organized, will be paid well, that the factories will be built by workers that are being paid prevailing wage, and that they'll have childcare plans. And all of that is because of the nature, and that all the materials will be made in America. And all of that is because of the kind of Bidenomics policies that were put into place as a part of this. That's worth remembering.
That is exactly the point. Scott, I appreciate the time, the expertise, the thoughts. Great stuff you do over there at the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Hope folks will check out the website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Scott Paul, appreciate the time.
Hey, Rick, always great to be with you. Keep up the great work.
Thanks so much, our good friend Scott Paul. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. And take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The phone lines are open.
Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1959. That was the day that the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a decision that would be a blow to the cause of labor. Striving for the kind of major gains they had won in 1956, the 500,000 members of the United Steelworkers of America once again went out on strike. The steel industry was extremely profitable, and the workers demanded to share in the fruits of their labor. Management wanted the ability to introduce new technology and policies to cut hours and employees. The strike wore on for more than 100 days. President Dwight D. Eisenhower ordered the steelworkers back to the plants. He argued that the Taft-Hartley Act gave him the legal means to issue the order. A decade earlier, Congress had passed the Taft-Hartley Act over President Harry Truman's veto as a way to curtail union rights. The steelworkers protested the constitutionality of the law all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The union lost. In making its decision, the court referenced President Eisenhower's explanation of the impact of the strike, writing, quote, "The strike has closed 85% of the nation's steel mills, shutting off practically all new supplies of steel. Over 500,000 steelworkers and about 200,000 workers in related industries, together with their families, have been deprived of their usual means of support. Present steel supplies are low, and the resumption of full-scale production will require some weeks. If production is not quickly resumed, severe effects upon the economy will endanger the economic health of the nation." The next January, the union and management signed a new contract. The workers won a 7-cent an hour raise, a new automatic cost of living adjustment, improvements in their pension and health care benefits, and job protections against proposed automation.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So how many people are fed up with the tipping craze that's going on? You know, it seems like everywhere you go now that people are going, hey, you're throwing a little extra there for the workers. And you're going, isn't that what the employers are supposed to be doing? And look, you know, I've said this a number of times before. I consider myself a fairly generous tipper. We're usually in the 25-30% range, maybe a little bit more when we go out to dinner, depending on the rounding. Because for me, it's really not about the service as much as it's about just how easy the math is. And I know that's sad, but you know, like the other night, we went out to dinner and to a really expensive place at the Hollywood casinos because we went to go see this lantern thing, and you know, dinner was like $90, so I just made $120, so it was like a 33% tip. Which I think is reasonable, is good, not horrible. But the guy did a good job. I mean, he was a good waiter. You know, everything was nice, everything was good. That. But when you go to the pretzel factory to get a pretzel from the counter, do you have to tip just them putting it in a bag and ringing it up? And I don't think so. I think they should be paid a fair wage. I think they should be able to make a living wage off of the work that they do, and not have to do the tip thing. And it turns out Americans are on board with this. In fact, there has been a survey done, a new report out that's shedding some light. They point out that 63% of Americans are overwhelmed by tipping requests. Look, we're going to a football game on Monday. I'm going to up to Buffalo to see the Broncos play, and you're going to go buy a beer at the concession stand, and they're going to turn the little pad around and want you to tip for just pouring the beer. And you go, well, you do that at a bartender, and you go, yeah, but that's not how it had been. And this is where people are getting tired of it. So you have 3/4 of the people right now, 75% of people are ready to eliminate tipping in favor of a higher minimum wage. 62% would pay higher prices if they didn't have to tip. 2 in 3 would do away with tipping altogether. And I've said for a long time, tips are supposed to be, this is what it was explained to me, were supposed to be a, if you went above and beyond. If you provided exceptional service, it was above everything else. The bill should be, should include your labor, should include a reasonable wage, and that's the employer's fault. What has happened in this country, and this is the angering and frustrating part, and I brought this up to my daughter who had worked in a restaurant for a while, just to get her sense of it. And she brought up the fact that, you know, wage theft in the tipping is just rampant. The every employer that she'd worked for, you know, there had been questions of them stealing tips. And if that's how they're making their, if that's how waitresses and waiters are making their living off of your generosity, and a large portion of it doesn't go to the person that you're being generous to, that's infuriating. And look, I've told this story before. My wife's going to roll her eyes because she always does. But, you know, the first time you know I found out about wage theft in the tip thing was, you know, my wife was a volunteer guide at a trail riding horses and stuff. And I had volunteered as a big brother for them.
You are listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.